want to know how to find it. Seek it out when they hide it. You know it's in the bag when it's an easy grab. But come on, take a chance now. Geocache, and if you need help, we're right there in a flash. If you got a question, just call in and ask. I cover the stash on the Geocaching Podcast. The Geocaching Podcast.
Welcome to the Geocaching Podcast, episode 400, recorded live on April 29th, 2015. I'm your host, Head Hard Hat, with
Stevens at Infinitum, and
Task 427 with special guest host
G-Man Zan.
Wow, what a mouthful. Hey, our chat room or watch our live video stream, plus participate with us as we record this episode. All this and more can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.com/live. Be sure to contact us via our voicemail line at 63031-VOICE. You can also find us on Twitter at geocachingpodcast.com/Twitter and Facebook at geocachingpodcast.com/Facebook. This episode is sponsored by cache-advance.com for all your geocaching needs. Cache-advance.com, go find it. And yes, even after 400 episodes, we still can't get it right. It's okay. That's life.
Can't blame that on Google, Chad.
No, that one's on me.
That's the beauty of live recording, because, hey, we are genuine people, and as genuine people go, we muck up.
And some days you can't even get your own name right.
No, I can't. That's just how it goes. Yes. Because I'll see, with me, you know how I love to slaughter the English language anyway, so it's all good. It really is. Lots of fun, yes. 400 episodes. Holy cow. I feel like I don't want to see Last of the Mohicans, because I have a fine panel of gentlemen in front of me here. And others in the wings. Mr. Scott Burks is out on assignment with Sports Illustrated. I'm hearing he's got the centerfold.
that is an issue I will be passing on.
I'm telling you. I will be selling extras, I'm just saying. Yeah, good stuff. Now, fear not. Because of scheduling stuff going on and GeoWoodstock coming up and all sorts of things, we have decided, unless some cataclysmic event happens, June 10th will be our reunion show. And we are going to try to get in touch with as many of the past hosts and people that have been affiliated with the show, and we're going to try to get them all squeaked into this one little room, and we'll see how we can do as far as getting everybody together. Yes, it should be interesting. So, yes, mark down on your calendars June 10th, and that's going to be our reunion show for everybody that's been in the Geocaching Podcast. I think that is going to be – that's a train wreck you're just going to have to see. I'm just saying.
Google's going to have fun with that one.
Oh, it's awesome. So, all right. Let's see. This week had a lot of fun. First time in a long time. Wife Amy says, when was this? 2 nights ago, I think it was, about 10 o'clock at night. She goes, Andy, first to find, 3 miles from here, let's go.
I read about this one.
Wow. All right. Let's do this. I haven't done a nighttime first to find in a long time. And here we go, man. We were in the car, and we were just speeding along at every safe, you know, speed limit that you're supposed to do by a law-abiding assist, you know, people. That we were going nice. Get there, and yes, we had clean sheets. So, yep, Miss Amy did ask.
That's more information than I wanted to know.
I'm just saying, geocaching, that is always a good thing. I'm just saying, right? Yes, and she even said, could this be her first to find? And me being the kind gentleman saying yes, because she had her foot on my throat, that she would be get the first to find on this one. So, yeah, it was good. It was
number two for Miss Amy.
Yes, Miss Amy has two first to finds, and she has discovered, and with her being a soon-to-be, she just finished her last class for her master's. And so, yeah, she's got the one big test, and after that she'll have her master's degree. For someone that's in behavior, I think she has been startled a little bit about her competitiveness when it comes to first defines. And those two little old ladies, we almost ran over getting to that thing. Had nothing to do with it. But, yeah, she is a bit of a competitive person with First Defiance. I think we're almost ready to call her a First Defiance hound, so that'll be a lot of fun.
By the way, were we supposed to be recording tonight? On the...
No, don't worry about it. I got it.
Okay.
I got it. All right, yeah, good stuff. So, Mr. Chad, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing pretty good. So had a pretty good weekend out here. Well, it was wet and then sunny. On Saturday, went and did one Cito. I was planning on doing two Citos that day, but I was completely drenched by the time I was done with one Cito. But I got one of the three open DT grids off my calendar when I went out and did that Cito. And then on Sunday, did another Cito, and it was nice and sunny. And I got another DT, so I'm down to a single DT left on my grid, and I finished up a battleship series, which has I think 23 caches in it all together, and in five different general areas around Houston. So probably 150 miles worth of traveling to get to.
Wow! Holy cow!
And it's been for a year.
Which DT do you still need?
I need a 1.5, 4.5.
Holy cow! Somebody's going to have to invent one just so to make it work.
I know where two of them are. Both of them are about an hour drive plus a kayak is pretty much needed.
There you go. Because I was going to say, what is it? It's got a sign pointing saying, here it is, but it's on the side of a cliff.
Yeah. something like both of those are pretty much like that. I mean, it's, you know, very large out in the open containers, but getting to that out in the open is the hard part.
Yeah, no doubt. So, Mr. Corey, I popped right over you, sir, when it came to the listing. I'm apologizing. How are you doing this weekend?
So, anyways, I just wanted to pop in real quick and tell you about my almost first defined experience. you know, I had one that came out. It was starting to get dark, and I'm like, wow, it's only 7 miles as the crow flies. I'm like, all right, so I'm going to drop in. And, you know, I didn't have my GPS. I'm like, I don't need it. It's only 7 miles away. And so I pop up on my phone, and I get there. And sure enough, 6 miles away, no cell service.
Oh.
You know, we live in the great state of Montana. And, yeah, a mile can really make a difference.
Wow.
And so I get up there, and it wasn't too bad. You know, I could still kind of see until I got up there. Then I was up in a state park, and we got, you know, 35, 40-foot tall trees. And it's just covering the area. And I look up there because I didn't look at the – you know, when you're going for a first define, you never look at the cache description. Bison tube.
Oh, no.
And I'm going, all right, I'm just going to stop right here.
Wow. Yeah, it just helps to be prepared.
So I haven't gone back to go look for it, but this morning I finally did break my caching streak. And, yes, I'm actually going to say I did log some caches. I found some smileys.
Yay!
And so I was 4 for 5 this morning.
That's awesome.
I had to get up at 3 o'clock and do a bunch of stuff so I could do some, you know, caching before work. But we're still going strong, right?
All right. Way to go. Well, it's nice to know that the pass is finally open in Montana and that you're now able to get the...
One of the passes.
The
main pass still isn't open.
I believe it.
We had a side road.
Hey, whatever works, man. I'll tell you what. Anything to get the supply line through...
That's right.
Awesome. So, Jerry, how about yourself? How's things up in New York?
Doing fine. I actually was traveling for work a couple weeks ago, about a week and a half ago. Went down to the Crescent City, New Orleans. Didn't have a whole lot of time to do caching down there, but I did end up finding two or three of them, which was always fun. And speaking of First to Find, as I was getting ready for the podcast tonight, there were 7 caches that got posted out. 5 of them were less than 5 miles from my house.
Oh, no. You are a trooper,
so I was
sir.
I'm very tempted to blow you guys off and just go.
I was going to say, do we scold him or thank him?
Well, you know what? I better check my phone because I think that's what happened. That's why Don's not here.
Oh, I'll tell you
so
what.
Jerry, were they pretty good caches in the Big Easy there?
Yeah, I actually found one that I had DNF'd the last time I was down there. We have a conference down there every, well, we have a conference every year, but every like 3-4 years it's down there. And I had gone after one, tried to find it, didn't find it the last time. Found it this time, so that was good. Nice to get one of those DNFs off your list.
Yeah, no doubt.
And then I did a virtual, which was kind of neat.
Which
don't see too many of those.
If you remember which one.
It was something about soldiers. It's right at the World War II Museum, okay. Which is down near the conference center, convention center down there. I've been down there a few times, and I've done a bunch of caching down there.
Yeah.
And
there's a bunch of great virtuals down in the French Quarter and stuff.
All I've ever heard is it's much harder to find geocaches after your third or fourth hurricane. Makes it much easier for a DNF. I just heard.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's move on to the podcast roundup, letting our viewers know what's going on in the geocaching podcasting community. And what's coming up this week on GeoGearHeads is episode 174, the randomized. Geez, I got to figure out. They've got it in Roman numerals. I believe it's 33. There we go. He actually has 33 next to it. That's, thank you, Daryl. I appreciate it. The Bad Cop, Daryl W4, the geocaching vlogger, and yes, you may have heard of this one before, Scott Burks, discussed a range of topics, including the new challenge cache publishing freeze, Munsee code of conduct changes, more on kayaks, a live prize to one lucky viewer, and more. Tune in live at 9:10 p.m. Eastern Time and 6:10 p.m. Pacific Time, and have your email ready. And that, again, is tomorrow for GeoGearHeads, and also tomorrow for the GeoSnippets Reboot Podcast. Wife Amy and I are going to be talking for another viewer request that wanted to go over GeoCoins, travel bugs, and other travelers. You know, I was going through my notes not too long ago. I think the last show I did for that subject was probably about a year and a half ago, and how things have changed since before, just trying to explain to somebody the difference between a path cache or a path tag and a geocoin. There's so many other travelers that are out there now, it's ridiculous. So we'll be going all over that tomorrow, Thursday, at the GeoSnippets Reboot Podcast. And finally, folks, we really, really appreciate for the people that have already become patrons to the show. If you get any information from the Geocaching Podcast and would like to help pay us back a little bit, because it literally helps keep the show going, we'd greatly appreciate you becoming a patron for our show. Simply go to geocachingpodcast.com, and on the right-hand side of the screen, click the Patron, Become a Patron button, and it'll give you all the details. We've got a little bit of a reward system going. If we get an expected amount by the end of the year, we'll have a massive hangout for everybody and have a celebratory show and a thank you for all you fine listeners out there. And we also have other content that we're going to make available to patrons as well over the next year. So if you considered becoming a patron, please do. We greatly appreciate it. Again, just go to geocachingpodcast.com and click on the Patron button, and it'll give you all the information about it. All right. It is time for the geocaching question of the day.
Hey cachers, this is Lookout Lisa from Cache Advance, and I'm your host for the geocaching question of the day. Well, Cache Advance is your geocaching hub for all your caching needs, including the Cache Crate, a monthly subscription box of geocaching and outdoor gear. Well, Mondays through Thursdays, we ask our followers on Twitter, Facebook, and Google+ a question about geocaching. We recently asked, did you attend a CETO or cash-in, trash-out event over the weekend? Well, after tallying all the answers, we found that 71% of cachers did attend a CETO event, while 29 weren't able to attend, but mostly due to other commitments. So here's what we heard. Jeff shared on Facebook, yes, in Prague of all places. Wow, Jeff, way to go. Well, Kathleen shared, I sure did. We hauled 3 dump trucks loads of garbage out of the forest. Oh my goodness, Kathleen. I saw some pictures on Facebook of that too. That was pretty amazing. Well, Lindsay shared, yep, helped pick up trash and trim back some trees along a hiking and caching trails in a state park. Well, James shared, nope, I spent my weekend crewing on a 19th century sailing ship. I know it's not a CETO, nor is it even geocaching related, but this kind of opportunity doesn't come along often. Well, James, you know, I think I would have done the same thing. That sounds like an amazing event. Dano on Google+ shared, I didn't as I was at a conference, but every day is CETO. And, you know, Dano, I'm pretty sure for most cachers, every day is a CETO too. Well, as always, we really enjoyed hearing about CETO, and you can too if you follow us, Cache Advance, on Facebook, Twitter, and Google+, for the geocaching question of the day. Well, thanks all, and happy caching.
Well, thank you, Lisa, and thank you for the geocaching question of the day. Let's move right into episode 400, the geocaching challenge discussion. Challenge geocaches, does anybody know off the top of their head? They've been around for several years now, yes?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
They've been around since I've been caching.
Okay.
They've been around since, 2011, so.
Yeah, it's been quite a bit. And a little thing that geocaching.com came up with starting on last week, April 21st, was a challenge cache moratorium, which is a fancy way of saying, you know what, for the next year we're going to just shut down challenge caches. And and we've really got a lot of mixed information about this and mixed feelings, and we thought we would discuss some of this because this is a good thing to talk about, not only because of challenge caches in them themselves, but how I think what's more important is how geocaching.com is actually handling this and how people feel about it.
Let's clarify that it's new submitted challenge
caches. Yes, the existing ones are going to continue on and go from there, but they're putting the other part out. And they actually are asking for feedback. And let's kind of go over, we actually put this out verbatim a couple of weeks ago, but just to go over it a little bit, it says, let's see, in case you haven't heard, geocaching.com instituted a one-year moratorium new challenge caches yesterday, which was for the 21st. No new challenge caches are permitted during this freeze, but any submitted for review, including those already published by a particular time, I think it was 1900 Greenwich Mean Time, are available. They are asking for specific feedback about what you like and don't like about challenge caches only through May 12th. So we still got a couple more weeks, folks, to get your information in. Make sure to head over, and we'll provide the link in our show notes like we did in the past to have your thoughts considered in the review process. And there's some things, there's 5 different things that they have that they'd like to know. We'll touch each of those and go over it a little bit. So, guys, I'm just going to leave it open forum for all of us, whatever direction you want to go with this. If you've got a certain idea, notion, or thought, just bring it out, and we'll run with it. But we'll use these 5 as our first part. We actually had a poll that I put out earlier today asking some geocachers out in the Google+ world to see what their thoughts are. We'll do that as well. So the first thing that they wanted to talk about is, what do you like most about challenge caches? And guys, anybody in the bunch have actually done challenge geocaches before?
I've done a fair number of challenge geocaches. I'd say the thing that I like the most about it is it encourages me to go out and do different geocaching activity than what I might normally do. It gets you away from, say, parking grabs and that kind of thing, and gets you towards doing more things depending upon what the challenge is. But it might get you doing more puzzles, might get you doing more multis, might get you doing benchmarks. It might get you focusing on getting these harder DT ratings. It might focus on getting you to learn a little bit about the history and go back and find some of the older caches, traveling, those types of things.
Now, when you go for those type of caches for the challenges, what sparks it off for you to actually start going for it? So is it something that you just suddenly decide, I want to do a challenge cache? Does something catch your eye that you then start searching for ones that fit a particular set of criteria?
Initially, in the first few that I did was, I happened to look on the map and I thought it was a puzzle, and I looked on there and I'm going to say, okay, what's this puzzle? And it's like, there's a challenge here to do 30, it happened to be 30 puzzles in a day, or not a day, 30 puzzles in a month. It was called the Month of Mysteries. It got me out there focusing on puzzle caches early in my geocaching career. And it just something that caught my eye, and it wasn't even a cache that was really all that close to me. And then that was early in my geocaching career, I start talking to other people, and there's other challenge caches, and there's clusters of challenge caches where I live. And, how most of the owners allow you to go ahead and sign the log early. So if you get out there, you go around, sign all the logs for all of them, and then look at what are the details, what are the things that you need to do in order to claim the smiley,
right,
so to speak. And then it's done things like one was spell out the word geocache with cities that you've been to within Texas, and you can't use a city twice. So it took me out to East Bernard to get the E. It took me to various locations, that cities that I might not otherwise have stopped at, and just interesting things like that.
That's awesome. Yeah, because Lisa from Cache Advantage in the chat room said that it does add a rich and new dimension for geocaching to be able to go out and give you that. Now, when I first started geocaching, the only type of challenge caches that I was aware of were more of like your county challenge, your state challenge, your DeLorme challenge, those type of things. I never even realized that there was a whole new dimension of, hey, here's this set of criteria that I'd like you to go out and try to figure out to get the smiley.
Yeah, I think the DT, the Fizzy, the calendar, and then the state and DeLorme ones were kind of the initial things that when you go back into the history of it and things that historically became challenge caches. But then here in more recent years, it's become, people are looking at, hey, what are the things that I've done that seem kind of unique, and let's see if other people are interested in doing it too, putting out a challenge cache for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, one of the things before we get into some of the other ones, we actually put out a poll earlier in today, and I was actually very surprised by the rather large number of people that responded to this. And it just said, in regards to the one-year challenge cache moratorium, how do you feel about it? And let me tell you the percentages here. This is live right off of Google Plus. And there were five choices that you had. Coming in at the high end at 53% was, it's okay as long as they make it better. Now, is that pretty much, I think, a fair consensus, I would think, overall with this, that they're willing to put up for an amount of time as long as they make it better? But I guess what we'll ask in a little bit is what you guys feel that actually is going to be. Or what you would like.
I think on that one, that's what I chose. When I saw you pull that out, I'm like, you know what? I am okay with it as long as they make it better. But on the other hand, the largest the largest difference is, you know, how long?
Yeah.
You know, how long do you really need to sort this out? Because a whole year to sort this out seems, you know, I mean, that's a horrendous amount of time.
It begs the question, why?
Yeah, so, I mean, as long as you make it better, but come on, is a year a realistic time frame? You know, is that really being proactive into making it better, or is that putting it on the back burner and coming back in it in 9 months and spending 3 months to make it better?
Yeah, yeah. So how they use that year is going to be very important because it is a rather large amount of time. And I think it all depends on
what they're going to do. If they're thinking, you know, we're going to spend some time gathering the information, reviewing it, coming up with a plan, and then implementing that plan, you're talking about coding, design, all of that stuff. It's got to fit in with their mobile apps. It's got to fit in with their website. You know, there could be a big project depending on the scope of what they decide to do.
If they're doing something that has checkers and stuff involved, that can be some amount of effort.
That's exactly what I was going to say. What is the review process going to be? What's the checker process going to be for this? And go with that. All right, excellent. Coming in at 26%, I don't do challenge geocaches. So, you know, hey, all right, 0.25% said, eh, whatever. 18% came in with, eh, it's a minor inconvenience. So, I mean, there's a lot of challenge geocaches that are still out there that are, for lack of better terms, grandfathered. So, you know, you've got your choices to go through. It's not like they just cut it off and said, sorry, that's it, and deleted them out. So that to me, is a good thing. 3%, this is messing up my geocaching plans. All right. For something,
how can you plan for caches that aren't there unless you're, I guess,
planning them out.
Put out challenge caches.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it's like, okay, you've got to wait a while.
Yeah, and I can see where if you've got something set up that you were kind of hoping for, that might be a bit of an issue. But then again, 3%. So that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
you know
what? I can't put out my challenge cache. I guess I got to put out some more lampposts.
There you go. And, of course, the last one was 0% as my life is now over. So I don't think this is affecting too many people when it comes to that. But we did get a lot of really interesting responses with this as well. And, for example, we've got here from Steve that said, I think a year is far too long. It feels as if geocaching.com is trying to lull us into forgetting about challenge caches. This decision should be made in a shorter time period. Dave said, agreed. I don't see why a moratorium is required in the first place. A campaign to solicit ideas and feedback can happen regardless, which... that actually makes sense to me more than the shutting it down. Now, Corey had actually said before, if they've got a major backlog and this is also used to try to figure something out with this, all right, I guess a little bit more clarification on geocaching.com side might help straighten things out just a little bit. Finally, Ben, a.k.a. Taco, said, I really hope they put some rules into place about challenges. And I wanted some discussion on this as well. Like the CO has to have met the requirements before submission. The challenge must be reasonably attainable, which is right out of the rule book for it. Like you wouldn't have to spend an ungodly sum of money traveling to 6 countries in 24 hours. And the challenge would actually make sense. We had a guy put a challenge up here to have 25 DNFs in a row on 5 different occasions. If I had that many DNFs in a row, I'd just get up and quit, LOL. And so some of this challenge just didn't make any sense. So, yeah, I think this would fall into the same thing that we've talked about in the past about virtuals and all the rest of it. If we've got a reviewer that says, you know, that has some bit of stipulation in there that's going to say this has to make sense without being too far out of the realm of realism, then that would help a lot as well.
Well, I know our local reviewer has some pretty stringent rules about some of those things, or implements some pretty stringent rules, and there are rules in place. Now, whether the reviewer follows those guidelines to a T, that's another question. But things like first to find counts, there is a good reason why to not allow those to be in there, which they aren't today. For safety things, you don't want everyone running to first to find just so they can make it, get a challenge cash, you know, 100 first to finds, 1,000 first to finds, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can definitely see some more stringent rules being put in place. I like the idea that the owner of a challenge cache must follow the or have qualified for it before they put one out. In general, it's kind of an unspoken rule to do so, but it's not required.
Yeah. So it's, again, it's a bit of a balance to make sure that things are kept under control. Dane put in the chat room here, they're taking the answers to the form questions, then hashing the responses, then putting in a plan together, then pulling the plan, then finalizing the plan, then implementing the plan. That would be awesome if they can do that. So if that's the purpose behind it, all right, I still say a year might be a bit pushing it, but as Jerry said, if this is something that's going to be put in as actually part of geocaching.com's curriculum, you know, as a geocaching type, say, yes. And it's going to take time for them to put all that in place.
Yeah. I mean, and people have been begging for challenge caches to have their own count. Well, basically ever since the challenges in 2011 came along.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, I definitely think they should have their own icon.
And I do not want them to change the existing challenge caches to the new icons, because that's going to screw up my puzzle count.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. You can't do that. That's going to mess people's stats up, and you do not want to do that.
Yeah, exactly. And they haven't done that in the past, and I think they'll stick to that where they won't change anything. But going forward, you know, if they're going to change it, then it'll start counting. So, you know, they've done a pretty good job of that in the past, and I just hope that they keep open communication with the cashers. That's what I'm hoping, and you know, I hope that it goes beyond just the geocaching forums.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know that the geocaching forums are have always been their fallback, and where, you know, right now the poll questions are in there and they're being answered through the forums. But I'd like them to start. I'd really like them to start, you know, answering past there. You know, start shooting them out to the emails of everybody who's, you know, there is a way to get that and to pull that in. And I mean, it shouldn't be as tedious as, I mean, it'll be a little bit more tedious, but I think it'll reach more people.
How about just plain face-to-face? If they've got, I mean, how many times do the lackeys go to mega events, go to some of these other larger events all around the world? You know, have some extra people out there that they can sit there and be out there with the iPads and have people talk about it right then and there face-to-face so that they can see exactly what's going on, because you lose it in the translation in the text sometimes.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely need to be on the forums, because there's a lot of people, including myself, that just won't go to those forums anymore. There's been too much negativity by certain individuals out there on the forums, and you know, I just...
It's been there since I've been there like that, and right. I totally agree. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But at least this section of the forum, they're keeping it... you know, open, you know, this is your, you know, send us the feedback, give us there. You're not talking to the people in the forums that are that way, that make it rough for people to try to express themselves. You're actually talking with them at geocaching.com, which makes a big difference, I think. Some of the other things they wanted to know as well is, what do you not like about challenge caches? And I think the one that I've heard the most from people over the past couple of weeks is the ridiculous. If they can eliminate the ridiculous, that will help a lot. And
how, if they can get rid of that before it comes to a point like virtuals were, then, you know, and I think that's what they want to do. They want to nip it in the bud before it becomes a problem and people are so disgusted by it that it leaves a bad taste in the mouth.
Yeah, and Corey was actually talking to me just before the show started out. There has to be a way of distinguishing where even a larger amount of the geocaches out there may go, well, I can't do that. There is a percentage that can. And Corey, why don't you talk about that one with hiking?
Because, I mean, there are certain things, and I think the uniqueness and really a personal individuality and originality comes into it, because we have an individual here, and he had to go back and forth with the reviewer for about 2 months to get this challenge cache, and it's one that's been put out for just over 3 years, and it's still not been logged. There's been notes on it for people who are logging, but it's one that's a 100-mile hiking challenge, and in it, in order to log it, you have to log hikes that are over 2 miles long and average a certain amount of elevation change, you know, and nobody's completed it yet. But one of the things is, with the way that this cacher hides his hides, if you go out and find most of his hides, you'll get really close to having the miles that you need.
So for somebody who is apt to do 100 miles and go, I can do that, it's perfectly fine. For somebody like me, 100 miles is going to be a while, if at all.
Well, with the elevation change, you know, when I was down in Brazil, I was probably getting those elevation changes, but here in Houston, it's not happening.
Yeah.
Well, and that's
why I couldn't go
back to the reasonableness of it.
Yes.
And that's why it's based in the Rockies.
Yeah.
Right. So I couldn't go visit it and do it realistically.
Yeah.
If a challenge cache has sat there for 3 years and nobody's logged it, then it's probably not reasonable, because would have done it.
There's people that are doing their notes and they're logging their hikes they go.
And for them to actually be able to eventually complete it, even though it takes X amount of time to do it, that still is, you know, if you've got people that are obtaining bits and pieces of it, and are still shooting for it, even though it may take what most people would consider an extreme amount of time to do it, that's a heck of a thing that you'd be able to say at the end when you're done and say, I completed that. So there's a difference between that, I think, and saying, you know, a zillion different geocaches in a short amount of time and you know, something that's just completely out of the realm. There's high difficulty, and I think that's what you would put on this, is it would be a high difficulty challenge and be able to do it, as opposed to something that's just plain ridiculous. And for people to draw the line for that, good luck with that.
It is a 5-5 challenge cache.
And that's part of the key is, you know, what is the DT of the challenge itself. If you're going to make something that's really difficult to actually accomplish, you better have a high difficulty. Preferably a high terrain as well.
And again, that's
the elevation change, things like that. Definitely the terrain is there. And with the length of logging, the difficulty is there.
Yeah. So it definitely makes it interesting. And again, somebody that would be able to be, you know, and I would be perfectly happy with that. If somebody in the review capacity says, okay, I'm sorry, this is over the line and this is why. And whether you agree to disagree or not, at least there's something there that says, you know, there's a judgment made. And I think that'll be fine.
And they went back and forth 3 or 4 times and sat back, you know, and he went back emailing and they came to a conclusion and they said, okay, this is what we're going to agree on.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Let's see another one on here. What would you like to see changed about challenge caches? I think we touched on a lot of them. Any ones that we didn't hit with that?
I would like to see an easier way to log the caches. And this could also be used for something like an Earth cache. For example, if you have a way for the cache owner, when they're creating their cache page, to put in questions that you can answer when you're filling out your find it log, you know, that will answer whatever, you know, questions, even if it's an open-ended thing where you list the caches that you found for a particular cache or whatever happened, the requirements happen to be, some way for you to put those in when you're logging the cache, and that'll go to the CO for
almost like a field note, whatever. I would think.
Yeah, something like that, maybe. But, you know, just one of the things I find difficult, you know, is you have to go to the cache page, and you have to send an email to the cache owner saying, okay, this is what I did, these are the requirements, how I met them, and then you got to wait for the cache owner to get back to you, and then you can log it after that, you know. So it's there's a lot of back and forth and run around, which could happen electronically through the website.
Yeah, and what
I've never experienced that with the challenge cache, and I've done that in multiple. I've done challenge caches in multiple states, so that might be a local thing where the cache owners usually they want proof in some sort of, like, you know, post a snapshot of your GSAC showing the caches, or list out the caches that you've done and what dates, that sort of thing. But a easier process than those type of things would be nice to have.
What happens, just out of curiosity, you got a person that's the CO of a challenge cache. You're going after said challenge cache. It takes a little bit of time to go, and the CO decides he doesn't want to be in geocaching anymore.
I think they should mandate it being, if someone wants to adopt it, mandate that it be allowed that they adopt it. Right now, the system of adoption, they have to pretty much get a hold of the individual who had created it, or they won't adopt it out. At least our local reviewer will not adopt it out unless they were able to get a hold of the original owner. They will archive their cache, but they won't adopt it out, which I find kind of irritating, because there's been some cool caches that got archived. Actually, I took one of them. I should say I replaced their cache after it got archived and took a was there, but effectively you don't have that history, that original date when that cache was put out there.
Yeah.
So while you get a little bit of the same experience when it's a cache from, say, 2002 time frame, you know, that could have been good for someone's Jazzmere.
Yeah. If you could describe your favorite challenge cache type, what would it be? The ones that I like are historic. I like ones that take me to different places. A lot similar to the GeoTrail that I'm working on right now in North Carolina. Those type of challenge caches I love. For lack of a better term, it forces me to explore in places that I may not have ever gone to learn things. Good stuff. Anybody else on that one? All right, let's do one more last one that they wanted to know about. What types of challenge caches do you avoid?
I avoid the streaks like the plague. I mean, if I happen to get them, great. But, you know, I get caches when I get caches, you know, and mm-hmm. if I so happen, you know, mm-hmm. get 100 or so caches in a day, great. And if I find a challenge cache that I get, awesome, you know. But if I have to get so many in a day, or have, you know, 365 in a year, I'm probably not going to get them.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
If a challenge cache gets published, you know, I'll look to see if I'm close or if I have it already. And if I'm close, I'll maybe say, okay, I'll figure out what I need to do to finish it. If I have it already, great. I'll log it, go out and find the cache. If I'm way off, I probably won't look back on it. I'll just skip it over.
Wow. Yeah, that's how it goes. All right. Any final thoughts, gentlemen, before we head out?
Well, just one other thing.
Project GC has some neat things for tracking some of the challenges out there, and they're mm-hmm. building more all the time. So that is a tool if you're into challenge caches. You can go out there and go to projectgc.com and see what ones are out there that you can qualify for. There might be some that are already out there that you already qualify for or real close. So.
Yep, good suggestion. Yep.
Now the challenge cash checker, isn't that for premium members only?
You can use the checker on anything by putting in the GC code or searching it. The map pulling up the challenge caches and with the greenlit items, that is premium only.
Okay. Okay, so individually you can check on the checker, but if you want to pull up a map of all the challenges, that's a premium. Okay. All right, I know there was a little bit of distance in that. Also, I just wanted to say that if there's anybody out there who just cannot get enough of placing challenge caches due to the overwhelming hesitance of people trying to force their way through GC.com doors for this moratorium, open caching North America has now opened up challenge caches.
Yes, they have.
So, not everywhere, you know, if you still want to place a challenge cache, there's a spot to do it. So,
you know, by a coincidence, how's this for a transition? Next week on the show, we are going to have Dudley Grunt, who'll be able to tell us more about that. He's going to be one of our special guest hosts for episode 401, and we'll get it straight from the horse's mouth when it comes to that, and more about Open Caching North America next week as well. Some dates that you might want to keep in mind this coming up weekend, May 2nd and 3rd, by the way, 15 years, geocaching.com. Congratulations, 15 years.
Wow,
May 2nd and 3rd, if you find a geocache on both of those days. And I got to see how the wording is on here. I don't know if it's one or the other or both. I think it's both, according to the way they say. There's a special mission you get placed upon if you find a geocache or attend an event on May 2nd and May 3rd, it says. So we'll find out how that works.
The second was when they flipped the switch to enable civilian access instead of basically get rid of the selective service.
Right.
And May 3rd was the day that Dave
Ulmer yes.
Placed the first geocache or stash.
Yes. So next week, or this weekend coming up, May 2nd, May 3rd, get yourself a geocache on both of those days. There's a special mission geocaching.com is going to put you on and I have no idea what it entails. I just know that you get put on a mission and you get a real cool digital souvenir. So we will see what happens, and I'm excited. This will be a lot of fun. 15 years. Mission. If you choose it, and then something blows up. It's really cool. As long as things blow up, I'm a happy camper. All right, folks, thank you so much. Please, again, consider supporting the show and becoming a patron, or go through our PayPal donation area on the website. And above all, please tell others about the Geocaching Podcast so they can come in and get all the weekly goodness that we bring to you each and every week. So thank you so much. All right, gentlemen, thank you so much. G-Man Sen, thank you so much. Guys, you're awesome. Appreciate it. And we're going to move on. As soon as I put my thing up here and push this little funny button right here. Thank you for subscribing to the Geocaching Podcast. Thank you, Lisa, from cache-advance.com. Please be sure to join us each and every Wednesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time for another episode of the Geocaching Podcast, right here on the Geocaching Podcast website at www.geocachingpodcast.com/live. The video version of our show is available on YouTube, and the audio version is available on our home website, iTunes, Stitcher, and many of your favorite podcatchers. We love hearing from our viewers and listeners, so please visit us through our social media sites or contact us via our voicemail line at 630-31-VOICE. The Geocaching Podcast is a Head Hard Hat production. It is produced by Andy Smith, Scott Burks, Corey Stevens, and Chad Courtney. This show is copyright 2015 by Andrew T. Smith. All rights reserved. And clear.
Now.
You want to know how to find it. Seek it out when they hide it. You know it's in the bag when it's an easy grab. But come on, take a chance now. Go geocache, geocache. If you need help, we're right there in a flash. If you got a question, just call in and ask. I cover the stash. All the geocaching podcast. The geocaching podcast.
Welcome to the Geocaching Podcast, episode 400, recorded live on April 29th, 2015. I'm your host, Head Hard Hat, with
Stevens at Infinitum, and
Task 427, with special guest host,
G-Man Zan.
Wow, what a mouthful. Chat room or watch our live video stream, plus participate with us as we record this episode. All this and more can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.com/live. Be sure to contact us via our voicemail line at 63031VOICE. You can also find us on Twitter at geocachingpodcast.com/Twitter and Facebook at geocachingpodcast.com/Facebook. This episode is sponsored by cache-advance.com for all your geocaching needs. Cache-advance.com, go find it. And yes, even after 400 episodes, we still can't get it right. It's okay. That's life.
Can't blame that on Google, Chad.
No, that one's on me.
That's the beauty of live recording, because, hey, we are genuine people and as genuine people go, we muck up.
It's, and some days you can't even get your own name right.
No, I can't. It's just how it goes. Yes. Because I'll see, with me, you know how I'd love to slaughter the English language anyway, so it's all good. It really is. Lots of fun. Yes, 400 episodes. Holy cow. I feel like I don't want to see Last of the Mohicans, because I have a fine panel of gentlemen in front of me here. And others in the wings, Mr. Scott Burks, is out on assignment with Sports Illustrated. I'm hearing he's got the centerfold.
And, that is an issue I will be passing on.
I'm telling you, I will be selling extras, I'm just saying. But yeah, good stuff. Now, fear not. Because of scheduling stuff going on and Geowoodstock coming up and all sorts of things, we have decided, unless some cataclysmic event happens, June 10th will be our reunion show. And we are going to try to get in touch with as many of the past hosts and people that have been affiliated with the show, and we're going to try to get them all squeaked into this one little room, and we'll see how we can do as far as getting everybody together. Yes, it should be interesting. So, yes, mark down on your calendars June 10th, and that's going to be our reunion show for everybody that's been in the Geocaching Podcast. I think that is going to be – that's a train wreck you're just going to have to see. I'm just saying.
Google's going to have fun with that one.
Oh, it's awesome. So, all right. Let's see. This week had a lot of fun. First time in a long time. Wife Amy says, when was this? 2 nights ago, I think it was, about 10 o'clock at night. She goes, Andy, first to find, 3 miles from here, let's go.
I read about this one.
Wow. All right. Let's do this. I haven't done a nighttime first to find in a long time. And here we go, man. We were in the car, and we were just speeding along at every safe, you know, speed limit that you're supposed to by a law-abiding assist, you know, people that we were going nice. Get there, and yes, we had clean sheets. So, yep, Miss Amy did ask.
That's more information than I wanted to know.
I'm just saying, okay, you see, that is always a good thing. I'm just saying, right? Yes, and she even said, could this be her first to find? And me being the kind gentleman saying yes, because she had her foot on my throat, that she would be get the first to find on this one. So, yeah, it was good.
Number two for Miss Amy.
Yes, Miss Amy has two first to finds, and she has discovered, and with her being a soon-to-be, she just finished her last class for her master's. And so, yeah, she's got the one big test, and after that she'll have her master's degree. For someone that's in behavior, I think she has been startled a little bit about her competitiveness when it comes to first defines. And those two little old ladies, we almost ran over getting to that thing. Had nothing to do with it. But, yeah, she is a bit of a competitive person with first defines. I think we're almost ready to call her a first define hound, so that'll be a lot of fun.
By the way, were we supposed to be recording tonight? On
No, don't worry about it. I got it.
Okay.
I got it. All right, yeah, good stuff. So, Mr. Chad, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing pretty good. So, had a pretty good weekend out here. Well, it was wet and then sunny. On Saturday, went and did one CTO. I was planning on doing two CTOs that day, but I was completely drenched by the time I was done with one CTO. But I got one of the three open DT grids off my calendar when I went out and did that CETO. And then on Sunday, did another CETO, and it was nice and sunny. And I got another DT, so I'm down to a single DT left on my grid. And I finished up a battleship series, which has, I think, 23 caches in it all together. And in five different locations, five different general areas around Houston. So probably 150 miles worth of traveling to get to.
Wow. Holy cow.
And it's been a hard year.
Which DT do you still need?
I need a 1.5, 4.5.
Holy cow. Somebody's going to have to invent one just so to make it work. Right.
I know where two of them are. Both of them are about an hour drive plus a kayak is pretty much needed.
There you go. Because I was going to say, what is it? It's got a sign pointing saying here it is, but it's on the side of a cliff.
Yeah, something like it. Both of those are pretty much like that. I mean, it's very large out in the open containers, but getting to that out in the open is the hard part.
Yeah, no doubt. So, Mr. Corey, I popped right over you, sir, when it came to the listing. I'm apologizing. How are you doing this weekend?
So, anyways, I just wanted to pop in real quick and tell you about my almost first defined experience. I had one that came out. It was starting to get dark, and I'm like, wow, it's only 7 miles as the crow flies. I'm like, all right, so I'm going to drop in. And, I didn't have my GPS. I'm like, I don't need it. It's only 7 miles away. And so I pop up on my phone, and I get there. And sure enough, 6 miles away, no cell service.
Oh.
We live in the great state of Montana. And, a mile can really make a difference.
Wow.
And so I get up there, and it wasn't too bad. I could still kind of see until I got up there. Then I was up in a state park, and we got, 35, 40-foot tall trees. And it's just covering the area. And I look up there because I didn't look at the when you're going for a first to find, you never look at the cache description. Bison tube.
Oh, no.
And I'm going, all right, I'm just going to stop right here.
Wow. Yeah, it just helps to be prepared.
So I haven't gone back to go look for it, but this morning I finally did break my caching streak. And, yes, I'm actually going to say I did log some caches. I found some smileys.
Yay!
And so I was 4 for 5 this morning.
That's awesome.
I had to get up at 3 o'clock and do a bunch of stuff so I could do some, caching before work. But we're still going strong, right?
All right. Way to go. Well, it's nice to know that the pass is finally open in Montana and that you're now able to get the
one of the passes.
One of the passes.
The main pass still isn't open.
I believe it.
We had a side road.
Hey, whatever works, man. I'll tell you what. Anything to get the supply line through.
That's right.
Awesome. So, Jerry, how about yourself? How's things up in New York?
Doing fine. I actually was traveling for work a couple weeks ago, about a week and a half ago. Went down to the Crescent City, New Orleans. Didn't have a whole lot of time to do caching down there, but I did end up finding two or three of them, which was always fun. And speaking of first to find, as I was getting ready for the podcast tonight, there was seven caches that got posted out. Five of them were less than 5 miles from my house.
Oh, no. You are a trooper, sir.
So I was very tempted to blow you guys off and just go.
I was going to say, do we scold him or thank him?
Well, you know what? I better check my phone because I think that's what happened. That's why Don's not here.
I'll tell you what.
Jerry, were they pretty good caches in the Big Easy there?
Yeah, I actually found one that I had DNF'd the last time I was down there. We have a conference down there every year, but every like 3-4 years it's down there. And I had gone after one, tried to find it, didn't find it the last time, found it this time. So that was good. Nice to get one of those DNFs off your list.
Yeah, no doubt.
And then I did a virtual, which was kind of neat.
Which
I don't see too many of those.
If you remember which one.
It was something about soldiers. It's right at the World War II Museum, okay. Which is down near the conference center, convention center down there. I've been down there a few times, and I've done a bunch of caching down there.
Yeah.
And.
Yeah, there's a bunch of great virtuals down in the French Quarter and stuff.
All I've ever heard is it's much harder to find geocaches after your third or fourth hurricane. Makes it much easier for a DNF, I just heard.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's move on to the podcast roundup, letting our viewers know what's going on in the geocaching podcasting community. And what's coming up this week on GeoGearHeads is episode 174, the randomized. Geez, I got to figure out. They've got it in Roman numerals. I believe it's 33. There we go. He actually has 33 next to it. Thank you, Daryl. I appreciate it. The Bad Cop, Daryl W4, the Geocaching Vlogger, and yes, you may have heard of this one before, Scott Bergs, discussed a range of topics including the new challenge cache publishing freeze, Munsee code of conduct changes, more on kayaks, a live prize to one lucky viewer, and more. Tune in live at 9:10 p.m. Eastern Time and 6:10 p.m. Pacific Time, and have your email ready. And that, again, is tomorrow for GeoGearHeads, and also tomorrow for the GeoSnippets Reboot Podcast. Wife Amy and I are going to be talking for another viewer request that wanted to go over GeoCoins, travel bugs, and other travelers. You know, I was going through my notes not too long ago. I think the last show I did for that subject was probably about a year and a half ago, and how things have changed since before, just trying to explain to somebody the difference between a path cache or a path tag and a geocoin. There's so many other travelers that are out there now, it's ridiculous. So we'll be going all over that tomorrow, Thursday, at the GeoSnippets Reboot Podcast. And finally, folks, we really, really appreciate for the people that have already become patrons to the show. If you get any information from the Geocaching Podcast and would like to help pay us back a little bit, because it literally helps keep the show going, we'd greatly appreciate you becoming a patron for our show. Simply go to geocachingpodcast.com, and on the right-hand side of the screen, click the Patron, Become a Patron button, and it'll give you all the details. We've got a little bit of a reward system going. If we get an expected amount by the end of the year, we'll have a massive hangout for everybody and have a celebratory show and a thank you for all you fine listeners out there. And we also have other content that we're going to make available to patrons as well over the next year. So if you considered becoming a patron, please do. We greatly appreciate it. Again, just go to geocachingpodcast.com and click on the Patron button. It'll give you all the information about it. All right. It is time for the geocaching question of the day.
Hey, cashers, this is Lookout Lisa from Cash Advance, and I'm your host for the geocaching question of the day. Well, Cash Advance is your geocaching hub for all your caching needs, including the Cash Crate, a monthly subscription box of geocaching and outdoor gear. Well, Mondays through Thursdays, we ask our followers on Twitter, Facebook, and Google+ a question about geocaching. We recently asked, did you attend a CETO or cash-in, trash-out event over the weekend? Well, after tallying all the answers, we found that 71% of cashers did attend a CETO event, while 29% weren't able to attend, but mostly due to other commitments. So here's what we heard. Jeff shared on Facebook, yes, in Prague of all places. Wow, Jeff, way to go. Well, Kathleen shared, I sure did. We hauled 3 dump trucks loads of garbage out of the forest. Oh my goodness, Kathleen. I saw some pictures on Facebook of that too. That was pretty amazing. Well, Lindsay shared, yep, helped pick up trash and trim back some trees along a hiking and caching trails in a state park. Well, James shared, nope, I spent my weekend crewing on a 19th century sailing ship. I know it's not a CETO, nor is it even geocaching related, but this kind of opportunity doesn't come along often. Well, James, you know, I think I would have done the same thing. That sounds like an amazing event. Dano on Google+ shared, I didn't as I was at a conference, but every day is CETO. And, you know, Dano, I'm pretty sure for most cachers, every day is a CETO too. Well, as always, we really enjoyed hearing about CETO, and you can too if you follow us, Cache Advance, on Facebook, Twitter, and Google+, for the geocaching question of the day. Well, thanks all, and happy caching.
Well, thank you, Lisa, and thank you for the geocaching question of the day. Let's move right into episode 400, the geocaching challenge discussion. Challenge geocaches, does anybody know off the top of their head? They've been around for several years now, yes?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
They've been around since I've been caching.
Okay.
They've been around since, 2011, so.
Yeah, it's been quite a bit, and a little thing that geocaching.com came up with starting on last week, April 21st, was a challenge cache moratorium, which is a fancy way of saying, you know what, for the next year, we're going to just shut down challenge caches. And we've really got a lot of mixed information about this and mixed feelings, and we thought we would discuss some of this because this is a good thing to talk about, not only because of challenge caches in them themselves, but how I think what's more important is how geocaching.com is actually handling this and how people feel about it.
Let's clarify that it's new submitted challenge caches.
Yes, the existing ones are going to continue on and go from there, but they're putting the other part out. And they actually are asking for feedback. And let's kind of go over, we actually put this out verbatim a couple of weeks ago, but just to go over it a little bit, it says, let's see, in case you haven't heard, geocaching.com instituted a one-year moratorium new challenge caches yesterday, which was for the 21st. No new challenge caches are permitted during this freeze, but any submitted for review, including those already published by a particular time, I think it was 1900 Greenwich Mean Time, are available. They are asking for specific feedback about what you like and don't like about challenge caches only through May 12th. So we still got a couple more weeks, folks, to get your information in. Make sure to head over, and we'll provide the link in our show notes like we did in the past to have your thoughts considered in the review process. And there's some things, there's 5 different things that they have that they'd like to know. We'll touch each of those and go over it a little bit. So, guys, I'm just going to leave it open forum for all of us, whatever direction you want to go with this. If you've got a certain idea, notion, or thought, just bring it out, and we'll run with it. But we'll use these five as our first part. We actually had a poll that I put out earlier today asking some geocachers out in the Google Plus world to see what their thoughts are. We'll do that as well. So the first thing that they wanted to talk about is, what do you like most about challenge caches? And guys, anybody in the bunch have actually done challenge geocaches before?
I've done a fair number of challenge geocaches. I'd say the thing that I like the most about it is it encourages me to go out and do different geocaching activity than what I might normally do. It gets you away from, say, parking grabs and that kind of thing, and gets you towards doing more things depending upon what the challenge is. But it might get you doing more puzzles, might get you doing more multis, might get you doing benchmarks. It might get you focusing on getting these harder DT ratings. It might focus on getting you to learn a little bit about the history and go back and find some of the older caches, traveling, those types of things.
Now, when you go for those type of caches for the challenges, what sparks it off for you to actually start going for it? So is it something that you just suddenly decide, I want to do a challenge cache? Does something catch your eye that you then start searching for ones that fit a particular set of criteria?
Initially, in the first few that I did, I happened to look on the map and I thought it was a puzzle, and I looked on there and I'm going to say, okay, what's this puzzle? And it's like, there's a challenge here to do 30, happened to be 30 puzzles in a day, or not a day, 30 puzzles in a month. It was called the Month of Mysteries. It got me out there focusing on puzzle caches early in my geocaching career, and it just something that caught my eye, and it wasn't even a cache that was really all that close to me. And then that was early in my geocaching career, I start talking to other people, and there's other challenge caches, and there's clusters of challenge caches where I live. And, how most of the owners allow you to go ahead and sign the log early. So if you get out there, you go around, sign all the logs for all of them, and then look at what are the details, what are the things that you need to do in order to claim the smiley,
right,
so to speak. And then it's done things like one was spell out the word geocache with cities that you've been to within Texas, and you can't use a city twice. So, it took me out to East Bernard to get the E. It took me to, various locations, that cities that I might not otherwise have stopped at, and just interesting things like that.
That's awesome. Yeah, because Lisa from Cache Advantage in the chat room said that it does add a rich and new dimension for geocaching to be able to go out and give you that. Now, when I first started geocaching, the only type of challenge caches that I was aware of were more of like your county challenge, your state challenge, your DeLorme challenge, those type of things. I never even realized that there was a whole new dimension of, hey, here's this set of criteria that I'd like you to go out and try to figure out to get the smiley.
Yeah, I think the DT, the Fizzy, the calendar, and then the state and DeLorme ones were kind of the initial things that when you go back into the history of it and things that historically became challenge caches. But then here in more recent years, it's become, people are looking at, hey, what are the things that I've done that seem kind of unique, and let's see if other people are interested in doing it too, and putting out a challenge cache for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, one of the things before we get into some of the other ones, we actually put out a poll earlier in today, and I was actually very surprised by the rather large number of people that responded to this. And it just said, in regards to the one-year challenge cash moratorium, how do you feel about it? And let me tell you the percentages here. This is live right off of Google Plus. And there were five choices that you had. Coming in at the high end at 53% was it's okay as long as they make it better. Now, is that pretty much, I think, a fair consensus, I would think, overall with this, that they're willing to put up for an amount of time as long as they make it better? But I guess what we'll ask in a little bit is what you guys feel that actually is going to be. Or what,
yeah,
what you would like.
I think on that one, I mean, that's what I chose. When I saw you pull that out, I'm like, you know what? I am okay with it as long as they make it better. But on the other hand, the largest difference is, you know, how long?
Yeah.
You know, how long do you really need to sort this out? Because a whole year to sort this out seems, you know, I mean, that's a horrendous amount of time.
It begs the question, why?
Yeah, so, I mean, as long as you make it better, but come on, is a year a realistic time frame? You know, is that really being proactive into making it better, or is that putting it on the back burner and coming back in it in 9 months and spending 3 months to make it better?
Yeah, yeah. So how they use that year is going to be very important because it is a rather large amount of time. And I think it all depends on
what they're going to do. If they're thinking, you know, we're going to spend some time gathering the information, reviewing it, coming up with a plan, and then implementing that plan. You're talking about coding, design, all of that stuff. It's got to fit in with their mobile apps. It's got to fit in with their website. You know, there could be a lot of, it could be a big project if, depending on the scope of what they decide to do.
If they're doing something that has checkers and stuff involved, that can be some amount of effort.
That's exactly what I was going to say. What is the review process going to be? What's the checker process going to be for this? And go with that. All right, excellent. Coming in at 26%, I don't do challenge geocaches. So, you know, hey, all right, 0.25% said, eh, whatever. 18% came in with, eh, it's a minor inconvenience. So, I mean, there's a lot of challenge geocaches that are still out there that are, for lack of better terms, grandfathered. So, you know, you've got your choices to go through. It's not like they just cut it off and said, sorry, that's it, and deleted them out. So that to me, is a good thing. 3%, this is messing up my geocaching plans. All right. For something,
how can you plan for caches that aren't there unless you're, I guess,
planning them out.
Put out challenge caches.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it's like, okay, you've got to wait a while.
Yeah, and I can see where if you've got something set up that you were kind of hoping for, that might be a bit of an issue, but then again, 3%. So that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
you know what?
I can't put out my challenge cache. I guess I got to put out some more lampposts.
There you go. And of course, the last one was 0% as my life is now over. So I don't think this is affecting too many people when it comes to that. But we did get a lot of really interesting responses with this as well. And, for example, we've got here from Steve that said, I think a year is far too long. It feels as if geocaching.com is trying to lull us into forgetting about challenge caches. This decision should be made in a shorter time period. Dave said, agreed. I don't see why a moratorium is required in the first place. A campaign to solicit ideas and feedback can happen regardless, which... That actually makes sense to me more than the shutting it down. Now, Corey had actually said before, if they've got a major backlog and this is also used to try to figure something out with this, all right, I guess a little bit more clarification on geocaching.com side. might help straighten things out just a little bit. Finally, Ben, a.k.a. Taco, said, I really hope they put some rules into place about challenges. And I wanted some discussion on this as well. Like the CO has to have met the requirements before submission. The challenge must be reasonably attainable, which is right out of the rule book for it. Like you wouldn't have to spend an ungodly sum of money traveling to 6 countries in 24 hours. And the challenge would actually make sense. We had a guy put a challenge up here to have 25 DNFs in a row on 5 different occasions. If I had that many DNFs in a row, I'd just get up and quit, LOL. And so some of this challenge just didn't make any sense. So, yeah, I think this would fall into the same thing that we've talked about in the past about virtuals and all the rest of it. If we've got a reviewer that says, you know, that has some bit of stipulation in there that's going to say this has to make sense without being too far out of the realm of realism, then that would help a lot as well.
Mm-hmm. I know our local reviewer has some pretty stringent rules about some of those things, or implements some pretty stringent rules, and there are rules in place. Now, whether the reviewer follows those guidelines to a T, that's another question. But things like first to find counts, there is a good reason why to not allow those to be in there, which they aren't today, for safety things. You don't want everyone running to first to find just so they can make it, get a challenge cash, you know, 100 first to finds, 1,000 first to finds, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can definitely see some more stringent rules being put in place. I like the idea that the owner of a challenge cache must follow the or have qualified for it before they put one out. In general, it's kind of an unspoken rule to do so, but mm-hmm. it's not required.
Yeah. So it's, again, it's a bit of a balance to make sure that things are kept under control. Dane put in the chat room here, they're taking the answers to the form questions, then hashing the responses, then putting in a plan together, then pulling the plan, then finalizing the plan, then implementing the plan. That would be awesome if they can do that. So if that's the purpose behind it, all right, I still say a year might be a bit pushing it, but then, as Jerry said, if this is something that's going to be put in as actually part of geocaching.com's curriculum, you know, as a geocaching type, say, yes. And it's going to take time for them to put all that in place.
Yeah. I mean, and people have been begging for challenge caches to have their own count. Well, basically ever since the challenges in 2011 came along.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, I definitely think they should have their own icon.
And I do not want them to change the existing challenge caches to the new icons, because that's going to screw up my puzzle count.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. You can't do that. That's going to mess people's stats up, and you do not want to do that.
Yeah, exactly. And they haven't done that in the past, and I think they'll stick to that where they won't change anything. But going forward, you know, if they're going to change it, then it'll start counting. So, you know, they've done a pretty good job of that in the past, and I just hope that they keep open communication with the cashers. That's what I'm hoping, and you know, I hope that it goes beyond just the geocaching forums.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know that the geocaching forums are have always been their fallback, and where, you know, right now the poll questions are in there and they're being answered through the forums. But I'd like them to start. I'd really like them to start, you know, answering past there, you know, start shooting them out to the emails of everybody who's, you know, there is a way to get that into to pull that in. And I mean, it shouldn't be as tedious as, I mean, it'll be a little bit more tedious, but I think it'll reach more people.
How about just plain face to face? If they've got, I mean, how many times do the lackeys go to mega events, go to some of these other larger events all around the world. You know, have some extra people out there that they can sit there and be out there with the iPads and have people talk about it right then and there, face to face, so that they can see exactly what's going on, because you lose it in the translation in the text sometimes.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely need to be on the forums, because there's a lot of people, including myself, that just won't go to those forums anymore. There's been too much negativity by certain individuals out there on the forums, and
it's been there since I've been there like that, and right. I totally agree. Yeah, mm-hmm. But at least this section of the forum, they're keeping it, you know, open. You know, this is your, you know, send us the feedback, give us there. You're not talking to the people in the forums that are that way, that make it rough for people to try to express themselves. You're actually talking with them at geocaching.com, yeah, which makes a big difference, I think. Some of the other things they wanted to know as well is, what do you not like about challenge caches? And I think the one that I've heard the most from people over the past couple of weeks is the ridiculous. If they can eliminate the ridiculous, that will help a lot.
If they can get rid of that before it comes to a point like virtuals were, then, you know, and I think that's what they want to do. They want to nip it in the bud before it becomes a problem and people are so disgusted by it that it leaves a bad taste in the mouth.
Yeah, and Corey was actually talking to me just before the show started out. There has to be a way of distinguishing where even a larger amount of the geocaches out there may go, well, I can't do that. There is a percentage that can. And Corey, why don't you talk about that one? With hiking,
because I mean there are certain things, and I think the uniqueness and really a personal individuality and originality comes into it, because we have an individual here, and he had to go back and forth with the reviewer for about 2 months to get this challenge cache, and it's one that's been put out for just over 3 years, and it's still not been logged. There's been notes on it for people who are logging. But it's one that's a 100-mile hiking challenge. And in it, in order to log it, you have to log hikes that are over 2 miles long and average a certain amount of elevation change. You know, and nobody's completed it yet. But one of the things is, with the way that this cacher hides his hides, if you go out and find most of his hides, you'll get really close to having the miles that you need.
So for somebody who is apt to do 100 miles and go, I can do that, it's perfectly fine. For somebody like me, 100 miles is going to be a while, if at all.
Well, with the elevation change, you know, when I was down in Brazil, I was probably getting those elevation changes, but here in Houston, it's not happening.
Yeah.
Well, and that's
so why I couldn't go
back to the reasonableness of it.
Yes.
And that's why it's based in the Rockies.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I couldn't go visit it and do it realistically.
Yeah.
Yeah. If a challenge cache has sat there for 3 years and nobody's logged it, then it's probably not reasonable, because would have done it.
There's people that are doing their notes and they're logging their hikes.
And for,
as they go.
And for them to actually be able to eventually complete it, even though it takes X amount of time to do it, that still is, you know, if you've got people that are obtaining bits and pieces of it and are still shooting for it, even though it may take what most people would consider an extreme amount of time to do it, that's a heck of a thing that you'd be able to say at the end when you're done and say, I completed that. So there's a difference between that, I think, and saying, you know, a zillion different geocaches in a short amount of time and you know, something that's just completely out of the realm. There's high difficulty, and I think that's what you would put on this, is it would be a high difficulty challenge and be able to do it, as opposed to something that's just plain ridiculous. And for people to draw the line for that, good luck with that.
It is a 5-5 challenge cache.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, that's part of the key, is, you know, what is the DT of the challenge itself?
I mean,
if you're going to make something that's really difficult to actually accomplish, you better have a high difficulty.
Yeah.
Preferably a high terrain as well.
And again, that's
the elevation change, things like that. Definitely the terrain is there. And with the length of logging, the difficulty is there.
Yeah. So it definitely makes it interesting. And again, somebody that would be able to be, you know, and I would be perfectly happy with that. If somebody in the review capacity says, okay, I'm sorry, this is over the line and this is why. And whether you agree to disagree or not, at least there's something there that says, you know, there's a judgment made. And I think that'll be fine.
And they went back and forth 3 or 4 times and sat back, you know, and he went back emailing and they came to a conclusion and they said, okay, this is what we're going to agree on.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Let's see another one on here. What would you like to see changed about challenge caches? I think we touched on a lot of them. Any ones that we didn't hit with that?
I would like to see an easier way to log the caches. And this could also be used for something like an Earth cache. For example, if you have a way for the cache owner when they're creating their cache page to put in questions that you can answer when you're filling out your find it log, you know, that will answer whatever, you know, questions, even if it's an open-ended thing where you list the caches that you found for a particular cache or whatever happened, the requirements happen to be, some way for you to put those in when you're logging the cache, and that'll go to the CO for
almost like a field note, whatever. I would think.
Yeah, something like that maybe. But, you know, just one of the things I find difficult, you know, is you have to go to the cache page and you have to send an email to the cache owner saying, okay, this is what I did, these are the requirements, how I met them, and then you got to wait for the cache owner to get back to you, and then you can log it after that, you know. So it's there's a lot of back and forth and run around, which could happen electronically through the website.
Yeah, and what
I've never experienced that with a challenge cache, and I've done that in multiple. I've done challenge caches in multiple states, so that might be a local thing where the cache owners usually they want proof in some sort of, like, you know, post a snapshot of your GSAC showing the caches or list out the caches that you've done and what dates, that sort of thing. But a easier process than those type of things would be nice to have.
What happens, just out of curiosity, you got a person that that's the CO of a challenge cache. You're going after said challenge cache. It takes a little bit of time to go, and the CO decides he doesn't want to be in geocaching anymore.
I think they should mandate it being, if someone wants to adopt it, mandate that it be allowed that they adopt it. Right now, the system of adoption, they have to pretty much get a hold of the individual who had created it, or they won't adopt it out. At least our local reviewer will not adopt it out unless they were able to get a hold of the original owner. They will archive their cache, but they won't adopt it out, which I find kind of irritating, because there's been some cool caches that got archived. Actually, I took one of them. I should say I replaced their cache after it got archived and took what was there, but effectively you don't have that history, that original date when that cache was put out there.
Yeah.
So while you get a little bit of the same experience when it's a cache from, say, 2002 time frame, you know, that could have been good for someone's Jazzmere.
Yeah. If you could describe your favorite challenge cache type, what would it be? The ones that I like are historic. I like ones that take me to different places, a lot similar to the GeoTrail that I'm working on right now in North Carolina. Those type of challenge caches I love. For a lack of better term, it forces me to explore in places that I may not have ever gone to learn things. Good stuff. Anybody else on that one? All right, let's do one more last one that they wanted to know about. What types of challenge caches do you avoid?
I avoid the streaks like the plague. I mean, if I happen to get them, great. But, you know, I get caches when I get caches, you know. And mm-hmm. if I so happen, you know, mm-hmm. get 100 or so caches in a day, great. And if I find a challenge cache that I get, awesome. You know, but if I have to get so many in a day or have, you know, 365 in a year, I'm probably not going to get them.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
If a challenge cache gets published, you know, I'll look to see if I'm close or if I have it already. And if I'm close, I'll maybe say, okay, I'll figure out what I need to do to finish it. If I have it already, great. I'll log it, go out and find the cache. If I'm way off, I probably won't look back on it. I'll just skip it over.
Wow. Yeah, that's how it goes. All right, any final thoughts, gentlemen, before we head out?
Well, just
I know
one
that,
other thing.
Project GC has some neat things for tracking some of the challenges out there, and they're uh-huh. building more all the time. So that is a tool if you're into challenge caches. You can go out there and go to projectgc.com and see what ones are out there that you can qualify for. There might be some that are already out there that you already qualify for or real close. So.
Yep, good suggestion.
Yeah. Now the challenge cache checker, isn't that for premium members only?
You can use the checker on anything by putting in the GC code or searching it. The map pulling up the challenge caches and with the greenlit items, that is premium only.
Okay. Okay, so individually you can check on the checker, but if you want to pull up a map of all the challenges, that's a premium. Okay. All right, I know there was a little bit of distance in that. Also, I just wanted to say that if there's anybody out there who just cannot get enough of placing challenge caches due to the overwhelming hesitance of people trying to force their way through GC.com doors for this moratorium, open caching North America has now opened up challenge caches.
Yes, they have.
So, not everywhere, you know, if you still want to place a challenge cache, there's a spot to do it. So,
you know, by a coincidence, how's this for a transition? Next week on the show, we are going to have Dudley Grunt, who'll be able to tell us more about that. He's going to be one of our special guest hosts for episode 401, and we'll get it straight from the horse's mouth when it comes to that, and more about Open Caching North America next week as well. Finally, some dates that you might want to keep in mind this coming up weekend, May 2nd and 3rd, by the way, 15 years, geocaching.com. Congratulations, 15 years.
Wow,
May 2nd and 3rd, if you find a geocache on both of those days. And I got to see how the wording is on here. I don't know if it's one or the other or both. I think it's both, according to the way they say. There's a special mission you get placed upon if you find a geocache or attend an event on May 2nd and May 3rd, it says. So we'll find out how that works.
The second was when they flipped the switch to enable civilian access instead of basically get rid of the selective service.
Right.
And May 3rd was the day that Dave
Ulmer yes.
Placed the first geocache or stash.
Yes. So next week, or this weekend coming up, May 2nd, May 3rd, get yourself a geocache on both of those days. There's a special mission geocaching.com is going to put you on and I have no idea what it entails. I just know that you get put on a mission and you get a real cool digital souvenir. So we will see what happens, and I'm excited. This will be a lot of fun. 15 years.
Mission.
if you choose it, and then something blows up. It's really cool. As long as things blow up, I'm a happy camper. All right, folks, thank you so much. Please, again, consider supporting the show and becoming a patron, or go through our PayPal donation area on the website. And above all, please tell others about the Geocaching Podcast so they can come in and get all the weekly goodness that we bring to you each and every week. So thank you so much. All right, gentlemen, thank you so much. G-Man Sen, thank you so much. Guys, you're awesome. Appreciate it. And we're going to move on as soon as I put my thing up here and push this little funny button right here. Thank you for subscribing to the Geocaching Podcast. Thank you, Lisa, from cache-advance.com. Please be sure to join us each and every Wednesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time for another episode of the Geocaching Podcast, right here on the Geocaching Podcast website at www.geocachingpodcast.com/live. The video version of our show is available on YouTube, and the audio version is available on our home website, iTunes, Stitcher, and many of your favorite podcatchers. We love hearing from our viewers and listeners, so please visit us through our social media sites or contact us via our voicemail line at 630-31-VOICE. The Geocaching Podcast is a Head Hard Hat production and is produced by Andy Smith, Scott Burks, Corey Stevens, and Chad Courtney. The show is copyright 2015 by Andrew T. Smith. All rights reserved. And that in